Grammy Award-winning saxophonist Branford Marsalis will return home to serve as artistic director of the Ellis Marsalis Center for Music in New Orleans. Stepping into an organization named for his father, Branford will carry on the mission of an organization dedicated to cultural enrichment for underserved New Orleans communities. Branford's recent work includes a soundtrack to the Netflix film Rustin, the powerful story of Bayard Rustin, the openly gay black civil rights leader who dedicated his life to a quest for racial equality. Branford, welcome in.
Hey, Dave. Thank you.
You know, you grew up in New Orleans, the jazz capital, and you were playing the clarinet at the age of 14. And I've heard you share this story before. It's a great story. When you decided to pivot to the saxophone, for what you say was a shallow reason. Share that story.
I followed three pretty girls into a dance.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of that first moment when I thought of girls as something different. And I was too shy to talk to them. So in my best teenage plans, I said, hey, if I join a band like this, then I can meet girls. So I never spoke to the girls. I went home and told my parents I wanted a saxophone.
Yeah.
Which I then got 2 months later around Christmas, and I did join a band, and then I learned that the girls talk to the singers and the guitar players before they talk to everyone else. So I still didn't get the girls, but I got stuck with a saxophone.
You got stuck with it. Yeah, I was going to say, but it led you into this direction, which has been a very big part of your life.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out.
Right.
I'd like to thank those three ladies, those three young ladies for setting me on a path that I had no idea would occur.
Exactly. Absolutely. You played jazz, you played big band, you played rock, but jazz is really where your heart is at, isn't it?
I mean, my heart is in all of them, to be honest. I mean, I enjoy everything I do equally, but for whatever reason, that's the thing that I derive the most, I could say, you know, intellectual and emotional pleasure. And so I always wind up going back to that. I started out as an R&B guy and a rock and roll guy. I didn't start listening to jazz with any intent until I was 20 years old, but it just grabbed me. And, I really do love playing it, but I also love playing the other things as well.
Well, and you've constantly kept your music, no matter what genre it is. Your performance is very fresh, and it is sometimes about the people you're playing with, but improvising and everyone improvising together is really key to make that happen.
Yeah, like the word improvisation has been just like corrupted beyond belief. I think that the best way to describe what improvisation actually is to go back hundreds of years to the 18th century, when there was a technique, you know, without getting too nerdy, called basso continuo.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever listened to a Baroque record, and I'm sure everyone has listened at least to one, Mozart or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right.
The thing you have to think about is that when the harpsichord, which is the early version of the piano, is playing, the only thing that exists on the music is the top line, which is the melody, and the bottom line, which is the bass. And everything you hear in between there is the harpsichordist essentially improvising his or her part. And that's what improvisation is to me. It's not a series of, you know, calculated licks that you play at the right time when the right chord shows up. It's knowing enough music to allow yourself to be spontaneous in the moment and to react to everything that is going on around you.
I was going to say, right, it's about listening. It's about listening to one another and seeing where
yeah.
they're at on a piece. It's like interviewing here on the radio. You have to listen to make sure the conversation flows properly, but it's the same with music. You have to listen.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
In the direction that a conversation goes in is based on multitudes of things, not a specific thing. One thing is vocabulary, like, you know, an inability to speak the language makes for a very limited interview.
It's true.
And an inability to understand the language also makes for a very limited interview. And all the things that occur in conversation what's the difference between fact and irony, tone.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that separates fact from irony is delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in music, we spend, in music school study, we spend almost no time on the subtleties, on the subtleties and the things that make music really unique. And it's the same kind of thing. What makes for a good solo in the rock and roll genre has more to do with tone and subtlety than it has to do with being the correct note being played in the correct chord sequence at the same time.
Well, you can hear that in everything you do, like your own style, your own way. But, you know, you've also performed and recorded with a who's who of jazz giants, including Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie, Herbie Hancock, and then other rock names like Sting and the Grateful Dead and Phil Collins. Like, when you play with them, Branford, like, do you pinch yourself playing with some of these greats, or was it just everyone just being a musician playing with one another?
Yeah, I mean, you pinch yourself off stage. You don't pinch yourself on stage.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I have to hear the song, and this is where my upbringing really leads to an advantage for me, because growing up playing popular music, if I'm suddenly playing in a popular music situation, pursuant to what I said earlier, I have a, for lack of a better term, rock and roll vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I have a vocabulary, so I'm not going to be playing with Sting and suddenly blowing out jazz riffs,
right.
Or playing with a classical tone. It's that you have to understand the context of the music that you're playing with. And I was lucky enough to have experienced that first and foremost in my developing music career. So whenever I'm in those musical situations, it's not like I'm going to a new thing. It's I'm going back to a thing, the first thing that I was intimately familiar with.
Right. We are talking to three-time Grammy Award-winning musician Branford Marsalis, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. Day Player back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking to Grammy Award-winning musician Branford Marsalis. Fast forward to just a couple of months ago, Netflix released a film called Ruskin, produced by Barack and Michelle Obama's production company, Higher Ground. It's about gay civil rights activists B.R. Rustin, and despite incredible odds, he managed to organize the March on Washington in 1963. Martin Luther King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech at the event. The soundtrack is all you. And what is the difference for you when you write music for a new album for yourself, one of your own, or comparatively when you're writing for a film?
When I'm writing a song, I'm writing what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm writing for a film, I'm writing to what I'm seeing. And again, another acquired skill. The power of instrumental music, which is one thing that I have to tell my students, because it would never occur to you as a young person when you're trying to execute complicated chord structure. The power of instrumental music is the ability to have an emotional effect on listeners without the aid of words, which means that you have to have a sonic understanding on what to use that can create the right emotional effect at the right time.
Yeah, very different. I mean, very different than just creating music for a new album, or maybe it's not. I mean, this is in your first rodeo. I mean, Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, Mo Better Blues. You know, this is something that's in your...
I'm much better at that now than I was then, because that one simple sentence that I just said had never really... I wasn't able to articulate that
back then. Got it.
You know, so the thing is that on a record, I write a song and I say, what is this song? And then the guys will play it and they'll know. Oh, this is a happy song. Okay, this is an angry song.
Right.
This is a melancholy song. And they make all the necessary adjustments. But these are our personal choices. Whereas because it's like there's a system that, and the system is that someone says, hey, you know, would you like to score this film? And you say yes, then they send you a script, which is really useless.
Yeah, it is. I was going to say that you have to see the emotion. You have to actually watch it to understand it, right?
They send you a script, and I've talked to composers, and they say, boy, I really love that script. And it's neither here nor there.
Right.
Because, and I did this once for a play. I wrote some incidental music for the revival of Fences, August Wilson's play. Mm-hmm. And the director hired me. So I read the play and I wrote the music because I was squeezing it in between this tour and another project. And I sent it to him and he says, you know, what the hell is this? I said, come on, Kenny, it's the music, man. You know, I read the play. He says, yeah, but you didn't see this play.
Right.
You know, you don't get to bring your own emotion to bear. You have to see Denzel and Viola and what they're doing because it's their emotion you have to channel.
Right.
So I flew to New York on the one day off I had, you know, pissed off, really.
yeah.
When I actually saw the play, I mean, it reduced me to an emotional heap. Just, yeah. it was so powerful. And Kenny was absolutely right. Almost 80% of what I wrote was completely useless. Like the intro was fine because the intro was happy and it's mm-hmm. great, but everything else, I had to just rewrite everything.
Start over.
And it was a lesson that I learned. You have to channel the emotion of the actors. You can't just go in and bring your own personal experience to bear. So when I'm doing a film, I need to see what's going on and work that out with the director. George Wolfe has very strong right. opinions about music, about what should be used, what not should be used, and where it should be. So with George, there's a lot of dialogue that goes on with that.
I was going to say, having a difference of opinion with someone you're collaborating with to do the soundtrack with a director, does it make you fight harder for what you think it needs to be, or do you really, really have to come to the middle?
It's a collaboration if the director is willing to defer. But if they're not, then it's their way or the highway. So you make your plea, and George listens, and he says, that's really great, but no. So you go with what he wants.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and these 40 years of learning experiences that you've shared throughout this conversation, you're teaching yourself, you're sharing that knowledge with others, because you are teaching. Your father was a well-known educator. So I'm assuming all of this, and then giving back and teaching others, was your father a true inspiration to get you into all this?
Yeah, my father, the greatest gift my father gave me was he forced us to think.
Yeah.
He didn't tell us what the world was. He would always say, well, what do you think it is? Which was horrible as a teenager. You don't want to hear that crap. Tell me what it is. He goes, nope. How'd that sound, Dad? He said, how do you think it sounded? You know, and after 10 years of that, and you go to school and people say things like, you know, how did you think? I said, well, what did you think? And then they get mad at me. I said, oh, I'm becoming my father. Great.
Of course we all do. Of course we do.
You know, so that's what I do is I teach that same Socratic method that my dad instructed people. It's like, you're not really teaching them how to play music. You're teaching them how to think.
What a great conversation. Thank you, sir. And congrats on the new house.
See you soon.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye.